Well, here we are, and I offer you this week a special welcome to this evening's Evening Under Lamplight, as we find ourselves in the midst of a long weekend of celebration for the first anniversary of Cambridge 105, community radio in Cambridge, which began broadcasting a year ago this month. The first Evening Under Lamplight on the new Cambridge 105 went out on July 25th, so we're celebrating the show's anniversary as well as the station's, and celebrating too all our colleagues who present the wide spectrum of programs that listeners over the past year have shown such devotion and loyalty to, and the technical team, to whom I personally am very grateful. We're all very grateful, and as we salute the station, we also salute you, too, out there in Radio Land. I can't raise a proper glass to toast you. There are rules about things we're not allowed to drink while on the air, but I'll raise my mug of jasmine tea in a warm thank you. And so, with this toast, I invite you to attend to Evening Under Lamplight here on Cambridge 105, of course, with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson, at email lamplight@cambridge105.fm. And the show is archived at momentsunderlamplight.com. Join the throngs who come to that site to hear the show again and all the archives. Mid-July is also traditionally the start of the Cambridge Summer Music Festival, and you are invited to come along to a variety of performances, classical, jazz, world music, and other things, not forgetting what promises to be a highlight of the festival, a musical, theatrical, magical evening called The Music of Magic, featuring none other than Neil Henry, with Felix Hagen at the ADC Theatre in Park Street on Sunday evening, July 24th at 8 o'clock. I know that Neil and Felix were in Cambridge recently checking out the theatre, planning the stagecraft necessary for the performance. All this work that has gone into the performance, and all for you and me, for our entertainment. Come attend to what will go on then. You can buy tickets online and see all the other events at the festival at www.cambridgesummermusic.com or by phone at 01223-300085, or in person at the ADC Theatre on Park Street. Now, how are we going to celebrate this anniversary occasion this evening on Evening Under Lamplight? Oh, just a miscellany of pieces for us tonight, all in some way having to do with birthdays or celebrations, looking back to what's gone before and ahead to what might be in store. First, of course, there are parties. So let's start off with three songs about parties. The first is a 1962 hit by Claudine Clark called Party Lights. Although she was born in Macon, Georgia, Claudine was part of that migration north and grew up in Philadelphia, like so many of us. Party Lights was her only real success, a song she both wrote and produced herself. Her next song, Walking Through a Cemetery, not surprisingly did not catch the Walking Through a Cemetery. Well, we've got a cemetery just out the window here, but we don't walk through it in our Evening Under Lamplight. Well, not surprisingly, it didn't catch the public's favor, and her career slipped downhill. The song Party Lights sets up for us a little dramatic scene. It's an early song about the tension between the teenager who wants to go out to a party and the parent who says no. She can see the party lights across the street and can't sleep. Well, the point is that everybody in the crowd is there. Teen culture. If everybody is there, then she has to be there too. Everybody in the crowd is there, but you won't let me make the scene. There's a bit of hip slang there. And then we get a little catalogue as she lists the members of the crowd she can see going in. Oh, mama dear, oh, look a here, oh, dear, there goes Mary Lou. I see Tommy and Joe, uh-oh, and Betty Sue. Why, uh-oh? A spicy bit of gossip about Joe and Betty Sue that she's going to miss? But even worse, uh-oh, there goes my boyfriend, too. We can laugh, but this really is teenage hell. And this being Philadelphia in the early 60s, home of American Bandstand, the main focus of attention is the dances they're doing. They're doing the twist, the fish, the mashed potatoes too, and I'm here a-looking at you, she says to her mother. A great line. But there's more to attend to. Listen to Claudine Clark's voice. How can we describe it? It ranges from high wailing to a deep huskiness, almost a growl. Attend to these shifts in her voice. It's wonderful, and it's really grown on me as I've attended over and over while preparing the show. I hope you love that song. Isn't it wonderful? And man, we're staying in Philadelphia and staying in 1962 for our next party song coming to us from the Sensations. It's another dramatic song. I mean, a song that depicts a little dramatic scene like Party Lights. It's about the anguish of a teenage girl who can't go to a party. But hey, that doesn't apply to you. You're already admitted to our Cambridge 105 birthday party just because you're listening in. But this girl is not prevented by her mother from making the scene. It's the girl who's having the party who won't let her in. She can see all the lovers on parade, their silhouettes dancing on the shade. She can hear the music, but even more tantalizing for a Philadelphian of that era, she can hear the dancing. Pitter-patter of the feet, moving and a-grooving with that beat, jumping and a-stumping on the floor. Maybe they were doing the Bristol stomp, sharp as a pistol. Let me in, open up, why don't you open up the door? There's not much more, there's not much more to the lyrics than this, except for a lot of wheel, wheel. There's something very touching, though, about her plea to get back in. And why has she been excluded? Our only clue comes from the two lines that are repeated near the beginning and near the end. Open up, she says, I want to come in again. I thought you were my friend. Here's what I think happened. She was at the party of her good friend and began dancing with her hostess's boyfriend, just having fun, but maybe going a little too far. And the hostess sees this, grabs her friend by the chiffon sleeve, and drags her all the way out the door and slams it shut. Huh? What just happened? Open up! Let me in! This is high drama in its way, and like all the great stories, it presents the story only from one corner and invites us to imagine the central events. The singer is Yvonne Baker, and because this is a group, The Sensations, the backup harmonies are much more present than they had been in Party Lights. The snare drum keeps the beat, varying only once or twice in the whole song. And we're back in the days when every respectable rock and roll song had to have its sax riff. Attend to the way the song begins with her knocking hard at the door to get back in. Both songs go out to all Philadelphians listening in, and especially Dal Steam Shovel, and of course to the great master Jerry Blavitt, the geeter with the heater, the boss with the hot sauce. And this is RLA, who knows what to say on Cambridge 105, we don't give you no jive, and the show is called Evening Under Lamplight, thank you. Well, we could take for our third song Leslie Gore's It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To, a kind of centerpiece to this sad party triptych. But in this song, the girl is at the party. In fact, it's her own birthday party at her house. But when we see her, she's sitting in the corner crying. Why? Because her Johnny has just gone out of the room with Judy. Why was he holding her hand when he's supposed to be mine? And a little later on, uh-oh, Judy comes back in with Johnny like a queen with her king. Oh, what a birthday surprise, Judy's wearing his ring. Yes, it's my party and I'll cry if I want to. You would cry too, she says, turning to us, if it happened to you. Well, yes, I suppose I would. But no, let's skip this song. Leslie Gore, born Leslie Sue Goldstein, is from New York and Northern Jersey, and she wouldn't fit in the triptych with our two black Philadelphia singers. But I did promise you one more party song, and for that, we'll have to move ahead 20 years and across the country to L.A. for a Randy Newman song. His well-known song, Mama Told Me Not to Come, picks up where Party Lights left off, with Mama telling him not to go to the party, but here the guy, rather than a girl, goes to the party anyway. And it's the wildest party that could ever be. Mama said it ain't no way to have fun. Now, I don't mean to tantalize you, but let's not have this song, but another Randy Newman party song instead. There's a party at my house tonight. Everyone's invited, so there's no teen misery across the street or knocking at the door. But this certainly seems like the wildest party that ever could be. Randy Newman puts on not only his nasty persona here, but also something alarmingly perverse. Don't forget to bring that little blonde-haired girl along, he tells somebody. You know the one. Love to watch her jumping up and down. Seem like her face get all red and spotty like she been out too long in the sun. And that little blue vein right beneath her breast, man, those nipples pink as a rosebud. Hey, Bobby, get the rope. What? What? And throughout the song, the piano repeats the hook from Mama Told Me Not to Come. Well, that's not quite the kind of parties we have here in the Gwydir Street studios of Cambridge 105. But then again, we're not L.A., where it seems only natural to produce a party and a song like this. It starts off like a simple rock and roll song, and later includes the obligatory sax, but then gets progressively wilder. Attend. That was Randy Newman. There's a party at my house. Famous last words. And now for a completely different party, though wild in its way. Mad, in fact. We're going to hear Cyril Richard reading Chapter 7 from Alice in Wonderland, A Mad Tea Party. Alice, wandering around in this mysterious underground world, comes across a table laid for tea in the garden where the March Hare, the Mad Hatter, and the Dormouse are having tea or something. She sits down and finds herself the object of a variety of different kinds of rudeness. Most of the grown-ups in the book are impolite in one way or another. Provoking would be Alice's word for it. And it's Alice's challenge through the book to fend off the grown-up nastiness as best she can without breaking the rules of politeness herself, or not breaking them too much, until in the end she upsets the whole lot of them. "Why, you're nothing but a pack of cards after all," she says. I find that people in England do not know Cyril Richard very much, but he was well known in America for having played Captain Hook with a wonderfully gurgly demonic laughter in the Mary Martin musical version of Peter Pan, first on Broadway, for which he won a Tony Award, and then on American television. You can see some of his camp singing and dancing from Peter Pan on YouTube. But even though I followed Cyril Richard in the role of Captain Hook in the musical version, my only stage appearance, I am most grateful to Cyril Richard for his readings of Alice in Wonderland and Alice Through the Looking Glass. For years, when we would go to old record shops, I'd search for these records and gradually picked up a complete set, all 12 albums. Then, later, we put them onto tape, and now I've digitized them. So here's the Mad Tea Party for you. About 13 minutes of wonderful reading. For me, Cyril Richard is as essential to Lewis Carroll as the Tennille drawings. The chapter begins, as they all do on these recordings, with a little wind ensemble piece. Take it away.
Chapter 7, A Mad Tea Party. There was a table set out under a tree in front of the house, and the March Hare and the Hatter were having tea at it. A Dormouse was sitting between them, fast asleep, and the other two were using it as a cushion, resting their elbows on it and talking over its head. "Very uncomfortable for the Dormouse," thought Alice. "Only as it's asleep, I suppose it doesn't mind." The table was a large one, but the three were all crowded together at one corner of it. "No room, no room," they cried out when they saw Alice coming. "There's plenty of room," said Alice indignantly, and she sat down in a large armchair at one end of the table. "Have some wine," the March Hare said in an encouraging tone. Alice looked all round the table, but there was nothing on it but tea. "I don't see any wine," she remarked. "There isn't any," said the March Hare. "Then it wasn't very civil of you to offer it," said Alice angrily. "It wasn't very civil of you to sit down without being invited," said the March Hare. "I didn't know it was your table," said Alice. "It's laid for a great many more than three." "Your hair wants cutting," said the Hatter. He had been looking at Alice for some time with great curiosity, and this was his first speech. "You should learn not to make personal remarks," Alice said with some severity. "It's very rude." The Hatter opened his eyes very wide on hearing this, but all he said was, "Why is a raven like a writing desk?" "Come, we shall have some fun now," thought Alice. "I'm glad they've begun asking riddles." "I believe I can guess that," she added aloud. "Do you mean that you think you can find out the answer to it?" said the March Hare. "Exactly so," said Alice. "Then you should say what you mean," the March Hare went on. "I do," Alice hastily replied. At least I mean what I say. That's the same thing, you know." "Not the same thing a bit," said the Hatter. "Why, you might just as well say that 'I see what I eat' is the same thing as I eat what I see. You might just as well say, added the March Hare, that I like what I get is the same thing as I get what I like.
You might just as well say, added the Dormouse, who seemed to be talking in his sleep, that I breathe when I sleep is the same thing as I sleep when I breathe.
It is the same thing with you, said the Hatter, and here the conversation dropped, and the party sat silent for a minute, while Alice thought over all she could remember about ravens and writing desks, which wasn't much. The Hatter was the first to break the silence. What day of the month is it? He said, turning to Alice. He had taken his watch out of his pocket and was looking at it uneasily, shaking it every now and then and holding it to his ear. Alice considered a little and said, The fourth.
2 days wrong, sighed the Hatter. I told you butter wouldn't suit the works, he added, looking angrily at the March Hare.
It was the best butter, the March Hare meekly replied.
Yes, but some crumbs must have got in as well, the Hatter grumbled. You shouldn't have put it in with the bread knife.
The March Hare took the watch and looked at it gloomily. Then he dipped it into his cup of tea and looked at it again. But he could think of nothing better to say than his first remark.
It was the best butter, you know.
Alice had been looking over his shoulder with some curiosity. What a funny watch, she remarked. It tells the day of the month and doesn't tell what o'clock it is.
Why should it? Muttered the Hatter. Does your watch tell you what year it is?
Of course not, Alice replied very readily. But that's because it stays the same year for such a long time together, which is just the case with mine, said the Hatter. Alice felt dreadfully puzzled. The Hatter's remark seemed to her to have no sort of meaning in it, and yet it was certainly English. I don't quite understand you, she said, as politely as she could.
The Dormouse is asleep again, said the Hatter, and he poured a little hot tea onto its nose.
The Dormouse shook its head impatiently and said, without opening its eyes,
of course, just what I was going to remark myself.
Have you guessed the riddle yet? The Hatter said, turning to Alice again.
No, I give it up, Alice replied. What's the answer?
I haven't the slightest idea, said the Hatter.
Nor I, said the March Hare. Alice sighed wearily. I think you might do something better with the time, she said, than wasting it in asking riddles that have no answers.
If you knew time as well as I do, said the Hatter, you wouldn't talk about wasting it. It's him.
I don't know what you mean, said Alice.
Of course you don't, the Hatter said, tossing his head contemptuously. I dare say you never even spoke to time.
Perhaps not, Alice cautiously replied. But I know I have to beat time when I learn music.
Ah, that accounts for it, said the Hatter. He won't stand beating. Now, if you only kept on good terms with him, he'd do almost anything you liked with the clock. For instance, suppose it were 9 o'clock in the morning, just time to begin lessons. You'd only have to whisper a hint to time, and round goes the clock in a twinkling. 1:30, time for dinner.
I only wish it was, the March Hare said to itself in a whisper.
That would be grand, certainly, said Alice thoughtfully. But then, I shouldn't be hungry for it, you know.
Not at first, perhaps, said the Hatter. But you could keep it to 1:30 as long as you liked.
Is that the way you manage? Alice asked.
The Hatter shook his head mournfully.
Not I, he replied. We quarreled last March, just before he went mad, you know, pointing with his teaspoon at the March Hare. It was at the great concert given by the Queen of Hearts, and I had to sing,
Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder what you're at.
You know the song, perhaps?
I've heard something like it, said Alice.
It goes on, you know, the Hatter continued, in this way.
Up above the world you fly, like a tea tray in the sky.
Here the Dormouse shook itself and began singing in its sleep.
Twinkle, 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 twinkle.
And went on so long that they had to pinch it to make it stop.
Well, I'd hardly finished the first verse, said the Hatter, when the Queen bawled out, He's murdering the time, off with his head.
How dreadfully savage, exclaimed Alice. And ever since that, the Hatter went on in a mournful tone, he won't do a thing, I ask. It's always 6 o'clock now. A bright idea came into Alice's head. Is that the reason so many tea things are put out here, she asked.
Yes, that's it, said the Hatter with a sigh. It's always tea time, and we've no time to wash the things between whiles. Then you keep moving round, I suppose, said Alice. Exactly so, said the Hatter, as the things get used up. But when you come to the beginning again, Alice ventured to ask. Suppose we change the subject, the March Hare interrupted, yawning.
I'm getting tired of this.
I vote the young lady tells us a story. I'm afraid I don't know one, said Alice, rather alarmed at the proposal. Then the Dormouse shall, they both cried. Wake up, Dormouse! And they pinched it on both sides at once. The Dormouse slowly opened his eyes.
I wasn't asleep, he said in a hoarse, feeble voice. I heard every word you fellows were saying.
Tell us a story, said the March Hare. Yes, please do, pleaded Alice. And be quick about it, added the Hatter, or you'll be asleep again before it's done.
Once upon a time there were three little sisters, the Dormouse began in a great hurry, and their names were Elsie, Lacey, and Tilly, and they lived at the bottom of a well.
What did they live on, said Alice, who always took a great interest in questions of eating and drinking.
They lived on treacle, said the Dormouse, after thinking a minute or two.
They couldn't have done that, you know, Alice gently remarked. They'd have been ill.
So they were, said the Dormouse, very ill.
Alice tried a little to fancy to herself what such an extraordinary way of living would be like, but it puzzled her too much, so she went on. But why did they live at the bottom of a well? Take some more tea, the March Hare said to Alice very earnestly. I've had nothing yet, Alice replied in an offended tone, so I can't take more. You mean you can't take less, said the Hatter. It's very easy to take more than nothing. Nobody asked your opinion, said Alice. Who's making personal remarks now? The Hatter asked triumphantly. Alice did not quite know what to say to this, so she helped herself to some tea and bread and butter, and then turned to the Dormouse and repeated her question. Why did they live at the bottom of a well? The Dormouse again took a minute or two to think about it, and then said,
It was a treacle well.
There's no such thing, Alice was beginning very angrily, but the Hatter and the March Hare went, Shh, shh, and the Dormouse sulkily remarked,
If you can't be civil, you'd better finish the story for yourself.
Oh, no, please go on, Alice said very humbly. I won't interrupt you again. I dare say there may be one.
One indeed, said the Dormouse indignantly.
However, he consented to go on.
And so these three little sisters, they were learning to draw, you know.
What did they draw, said Alice, quite forgetting her promise.
Treacle,
said the Dormouse, without considering at all this time. I want a clean cup, interrupted the Hatter. Let's all move one place on. He moved on as he spoke, and the Dormouse followed him. The March Hare moved into the Dormouse's place, and Alice, rather unwillingly, took the place of the March Hare. The Hatter was the only one who got any advantage from the change, and Alice was a good deal worse off than before, as the March Hare had just upset the milk jug into his plate. Alice did not wish to offend the Dormouse again, so she began very cautiously, But I don't understand. Where did they draw the treacle from? You can draw water out of a water well, said the Hatter. So I should think you could draw treacle out of a treacle well. Eh, stupid? But they were in the well, Alice said to the Dormouse, not choosing to notice this last remark.
Of course they were, said the Dormouse. Well in.
This answer so confused poor Alice that she let the Dormouse go on for some time without interrupting it.
They were learning to draw, the Dormouse went on, yawning and rubbing its eyes, for it was getting very sleepy. And they drew all manner of things, everything that begins with an M.
Why with an M? Said Alice. Why not? Said the March Hare. Alice was silent. The Dormouse had closed its eyes by this time and was going off into a doze, but on being pinched by the Hatter, it woke up again with a little shriek and went on, That
begins with an M, such as mousetrap. And the moon, and memory, and muchness. You know, you say things are much of a muchness. Did you ever see such a thing as a drawing of a muchness?
Really, now you ask me, said Alice, very much confused. I don't think... And you shouldn't talk, said the Hatter. This piece of rudeness was more than Alice could bear. She got up in great disgust and walked off. The Dormouse fell asleep instantly, and neither of the others took the least notice of her going, though she looked back once or twice, half hoping that they would call after her. The last time she saw them, they were trying to put the Dormouse into the teapot. At any rate, I'll never go there again, said Alice, as she picked her way through the wood. It's the stupidest tea party I ever was at in all my life.
Just as she said this, she noticed that one of the trees had a door leading right into it. That's very curious, she thought. But everything is curious today. I think I may as well go in at once. And in she went. Once more, she found herself in the long hall and close to the little glass table. Now I'll manage better this time, she said to herself, and began by taking the little golden key and unlocking the door that led into the garden. Then she set to work, nibbling at the mushroom. She had kept a piece of it in her pocket till she was about a foot high. Then she walked down the little passage, and then she found herself at last in the beautiful garden, among the bright flower beds and the cool fountains.
I couldn't resist following the Cyril Richard reading where Alice eats from the different sides of the mushroom with the psychedelic white rabbit from Jefferson Airplane. Not quite a party piece, except insofar as we're invited to feed our head, which is sort of what we do at a party, isn't it? At least some parties. And we always try to feed your head and your heart here at Evening Under Lamplight, on the now one-year-old Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge, presented by me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. Well, we've been looking at birthdays as occasions for parties, but there are other aspects to these occasions. There are times for looking back over the past, sorry for what went wrong, grateful for what went well. And we're lucky that one of our guests, Ray Davis, has written one of the best love songs about looking back in gratitude. Not specifically about birthdays, more about the end of a relationship, but a good song can apply to many situations. You took my life, but then I knew that very soon you'd leave me. But it's all right, he says. Now I'm not frightened of this world, believe me. I wish today could be tomorrow. The night is dark, it just brings sorrow. Let it wait. Ray is, of course, never going to take life easy, and his gratitude is mixed with his fears. He says he's not frightened of this world now, and asks us to believe him, but why does the night bring sorrow? Or maybe he means that the dark night just brings sorrow, but no longer fear. Somehow sorrow is preferable to fear? Okay, I'll buy that. So thanks. I'm full of sorrow now that you've left me, but at least I'm no longer haunted by all those fears. We've had enough songs from the 1960s this evening under lamplight, so instead of the 1968 version of the song Days, why not attend to this version from 2009 with the Crouch End Festival Chorus? Yes, the Crouch End Festival Chorus, an independent choir in Ray's home turf of North London, with the flexibility and sense of humour to work with Ray for the big performance in the BBC Electric Proms. I was moved by the performance in places, but my mind is not entirely made up about the album. Their version of Days is one of the strongest tracks, I think. It starts with no instrumentation, just the choir quietly behind Ray's voice as he opens, particularly touching at the line, "I bless the light that shines on you, believe me." Then a soft guitar as the choir comes up more noticeably. Then, about two-thirds into the song, in come the bass and drums and the choir in full throat. Performing this song with the festival chorus in Glastonbury in 2010, Ray dedicated the song to the memory of Pete Quaife, the bass player of the Kinks, who had recently died. It was Pete's decision to quit the Kinks that, Ray has said, inspired the song in the first place. And as he began the song, it was quite clear that Ray was moved almost to tears. That's the way a song should be sung. And then the energy building up. Like this.
Thank you for the days, those endless days, those sacred days you gave me. I'm thinking of the days, I won't forget a single day, believe me. I bless the light that shines on you, believe me. And though you're gone, you're with me every single day, believe me. Days I'll remember all my life, days when you can't see wrong from right. You took my life, but then I knew that very soon you'd leave me. But it's all right, now I'm not frightened of this world, believe me. I wish today could be tomorrow. The night is dark, it just brings sorrow, let it wait. Thank you for the days,
those endless days, those sacred days you gave me. I'm thinking of the days, I won't forget a single day, believe me.
I bless the light that shines on you, believe me. And though you're gone, you're with me every single day, believe me. Days I remember all my life, days when you can't see wrong from right. You took my life, but then I knew very soon you'd leave me. But it's alright, now I'm not frightened of this world, believe me. Days, thank you for the days,
thank you for the days,
those endless days, those sacred days you gave me. I'm thinking of the days.
I won't forget a single day.
that was the Kinks' song Days, performed by Ray Davis and the Crouch End Festival Chorus. Our reading from Robert Louis Stevenson also looks back to the past, the kind of looking back we do at birthdays and anniversaries, back at that old self of ours, now no longer there. I want to read just a short poem based on the Sky Boat song, but having nothing to do with the original Jacobite associations. It is spoken by an older Stevenson, thinking back to his younger self when he joyfully sailed over the sea to Skye with his friends in 1874 when he was 23 years old. "This healthy, jolly, open-air life is the fountain of youth to me," he said. "I scull boats and pull ropes and steer the boat and do all manner of things." And to his mother he wrote, "I eat, I drink, I bathe in the briny, I sleep. Generally, I live as a beast with the beast of the field." 13 years later, he heard the newly written Sky Boat song and chose to write his own words, not about the escape of Bonnie Prince Charlie, but about the lost self that enjoyed cruising over to Skye all those years ago. Quite a change from his present invalid self, confined indoors, always in danger of coughing up bowls full of blood, or lost for weeks in fevers and disability. "All that was me is gone." I'll read the poem, and then we'll hear Alex Campbell singing the Sky Boat song. "Sing me a song of a lad that is gone. Say, could that lad be I? Merry of soul, he sailed on a day over the sea to Skye. Mull was astern, rum on the port, egg on the starboard bow. Glory of youth glowed in his soul. Where is that glory now? Sing me a song of a lad that is gone. Say, could that lad be I? Merry of soul, he sailed on a day over the sea to Skye. Give me again all that was there. Give me the sun that shone. Give me the eyes, give me the soul. Give me the lad that's gone. Sing me a song of a lad that is gone. Say, could that lad be I? Merry of soul, he sailed on a day over the sea to Skye. Billow and breeze, islands and seas, mountains of rain and sun, all that was good, all that was fair, all that was me is gone."
Like a bird on the wing, on with the sailor's cry. Carry the lad that was born to be king, over the sea to sky. Loud the winds howl, loud the waves roar, thunder clouds in the air. Baffled our foes, stand on the shore, to follow they will not dare. Speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, on with the sailor's cry. Carry the lad that was born to be king, over the sea to sky. Oh, the waves leap, soft shall he sleep, for ocean's a royal bed. Rocked in the deep, Flora will keep watch o'er his weary head. Speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, on the sail. that was born to be king over the sea to sky. Bun that our homes, exile and death, scattered the loyal men. Yet the sword sleeps in the sheath, poor Charlie, he'll come again. Oh, speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, onward the sailors cry. Carry the lad that was born to be king over the sea.
That was Alex Campbell singing the Sky Boat Song. It would have been nice if I'd sung Stevenson's poem to this tune for you, but no, that's not going to happen, or at least not just yet. We're coming up to the end of the show now, and where's Bob Dylan? Aha, here he is. I've spoken of the way birthdays cause us to look back to the past, but of course they also prompt us to look ahead. Where will we be? Will we grow old and lose what we have now, or will we be able to stay forever young? The song called Forever Young, written, so we hear, to Dylan's young son, is a kind of prayer. May you stay forever young. This song also contains one of Dylan's best lines, which always haunts me, often, alas, as a self-reproach. May you always do for others, and let others do for you. We'll say that again. May you always do for others, and let others do for you. The version I'm going to play for us comes from Dylan's Live at Budokan album. It was the final song of the concert, and so Dylan prefaces the song with the somewhat fatuous remark, "Once again, it's that time of the hour when we have to run." And then he comes in with his nasal singing. A kind of Yiddish chanting, perhaps, lies behind this. And I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this has been Evening Under Lamplight. And with this song, we will wish Cambridge 105, "We Don't Play You No Jive." May we wish Cambridge 105 a very happy birthday, and may mid-July in Cambridge forever come to signify the time when we celebrate Cambridge Community Radio, which will, we know, stay forever young.
Well, once again, it's that time of the hour we have to run. May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars, climb on every rung, and may you stay forever young. Forever young, forever young. May you stay, yeah, forever young. May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true, and may you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong, and may you stay forever young. your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of change shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you stay.
To continue our birthday celebrations, I hand the mic over to Kipper the Cat with Darren and Greg, and they're walking into the studio right now. Over to you. Bye-bye.